It's a conditional use permit. We have a review process if we have complaints. And we have the right to set unspecified conditions to make sure that what wanted to be done as an occupation would not change the character or would, the neighborhood, or would not cause land use incompatibility. So far, it has been working very successful. We have found out that we were probably more stringent in our conditions than needed to be, and most of the problems that we have had with it, the ordinance was going back and giving variances to the standards or the control that we, the numbers that we placed on that. So from our experience at the city level, it's been working very well. And as a port commissioner and a member of the Chamber of Commerce, we would like to see the people to be able to develop ideas and test them, the marketability of these ideas. And then as the business grows, have to come into the proper area for whatever their business or occupation or industry would demand for future growth. And it is a way of doing things that need to be done and testing new ideas. And we also have occupations that have been going on for years and out in these areas, and they're not incompatible, but yet we somehow have ruled them out or any reasonable expansion of them in those areas. So we support the bill and would hope that you would pass the bill.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And Representative Bradbury.
Just a question. As some of the other committee members have indicated, there might be a problem in applying this bill to every residential zone in the state. Who knows? The Portland residential zones may be very different than our residential zones.
Yes.
What would your thought be about having a bill that enabled the local government to see your city of Reedsport's already doing it? So I guess my question is, what's preventing local governments from doing this now?
I think your exclusive land, your law on exclusive land use, farm use, and forest use practices.
Okay. So if we passed a law that enabled local governments to do this, that would be, would that be acceptable?
Yes, you have in this law, you have the statements here that if it's passed, that the local governing bodies, which basically I guess would come down to the counties, as far as this law is concerned, would be able to set the control and conditions and licensings of these businesses. So they would be assuming the controls. So that way the county then could look at it as a county matter, and the diversity of the various areas of the state could be worked into the county zoning ordinances.
Madam Chair, I guess a question to committee counsel. In the first lines 5 and 6 of section 2, home occupations may be established in any zone, including exclusive farm use and forest zones, that allow residential uses. Is that basically a mandate from the state level that would require that these business uses be allowed in those zones, or is it an enabling thing that would allow the local government to decide? I should probably ask Representative Anderson as well, but I'm just a little unclear.
I think it is enabling from the language, but I certainly would want to have, for instance, LCDC comment on that in terms of how it affects the goal.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
I'm not an extreme foe of LCDC, but I'd rather they didn't comment. I think that's what part of the problem is. we got way far too strict and too big of a hurry without realizing the consequences of our action. So now we are trying to piecemeal go back and correct something. And as I read not only that particular part, but some of the other problems that we have with the law that are being corrected in here, and I think it's necessary. I also serve on an airport committee. We're trying to get an airport in our area. And it's rather discouraging. You go through a whole long planning process to achieve something, and then you have to write an exception clause just to prove the same point that you've already arrived at. It's extra work and cost.
Madam Chairperson,
it's just no work.
Representative Priestley.
Sir, would you have this law? Is your intention to allow people to do retailing in their neighborhood? I have a neighbor who whoever once in a while sells rugs out on his front yard there, and as it's a, you know, like a yard sale, and he kind of pretends like it's just happens once a year, but it happens about every 6 weeks. Is that what you want? I don't think it's legal what he's doing now, but you want to make that permanent, that he would be allowed to do that?
Well, Mr. Priestley, I believe you live in an urban area,
yes,
the same as I do.
Mm-hmm.
I very well remember as a young child in the county and the community I lived in, way out where hoot owls chase chickens, the ladies used to hang their quilts and things that they made at home out on the clotheslines and out on the fences for sale, and it was nice. Yes, it could happen. But in an urban area, in a city such as you live in and I would live in, if that started occurring to where it was not something that occurred occasionally, then we, as we designed our ordinance in Reedsport, if your neighbors complained, then we would, after so many complaints, we would have you before the Planning Commission, and we could revoke your conditional use to do your home occupation. And if it's the same, if it created dust, odors, or so forth. The Dubala operation, I was involved in the Planning Advisory Committee for Douglas County, the coastal area, when their permit was going through. We strongly recommended it, that they be allowed to do that. But we did not want retailing, because we did not want a lot of excess traffic on that road. And we have that same clause on the city streets. We don't want to change the character of the neighborhood. And if it can occur without that, let it go.
Would you allow signs?
Like we do allow a sign.
A sign, like maybe...
Very strictly controlled.
A lady might want to be a hairdresser, and she'd put up a sign that said hairdressing.
It could not flash, it could not move, and it's of a certain size, and it shall be posted in a certain place so that it does not destroy the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Maybe someone would want to repair cars. Would that be something that a lot of young men particularly are interested in working on cars. And in fact, they like big garages so they can work on cars in garages. Would you have that kind of thing going on?
It could, as long as it was done inside of the garage and didn't create an unsightliness on the outside. Well, I have a neighbor that welds and builds trailers. However, he's very careful that he doesn't interfere with my TV viewing.
And he does that on the inside of a building, not on the outside?
He does it on the inside of his garage, yes. I also have another neighbor that hires other women in their own homes to create gifts, and then she packages and mail orders from her home, and then she also goes around like the... has parties, and she demonstrates her gifts and sells them to the people at the home, such as Tupperware parties.
Thank you. I kind of get the picture of what you have in mind. Thank you, sir.
I think each person on this committee probably has their own picture in their mind of what they would like to see, and it's a matter of writing legislation to make sure that what you want is accomplished.
Thank you.
Appreciate your remarks. Tony Kuhn?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tony Kuhn. I'm the director of the CCD Business Development Corporation. That's a three-county development company, nonprofit, that was created by Coos Curry and Douglas County some 13 years ago. We are very much in favor of this particular legislation. I'd like to give you a little reason as to why. For many, many years, we've been involved in business finance, business development, business consulting activities. At any one time today, we're working with about 75 companies. We also do industrial prospecting activities, so we deal with large firms and small firms and cottage industries. What we've seen happen over a large number of years is what we have in Oregon, particularly in rural areas, probably more so in cities than some would like to admit, is an economic underground. And one of the things that I recognized in that, and my board has, is that economic underground represents an opportunity to create a lot of jobs for a lot of people. Not in large numbers and in large facilities, but in rural areas, and particularly in smaller communities, the opportunity to employ 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe even a maximum of 5 people. A case in point would be that we recently, in the last 2 years, located a manufacturer in our area, which was going to employ quite a large number of people. part of the exercise of getting that industry to come to the area was that we had to demonstrate for them that there was not only skilled people available, but there was something in the area called vendors, meaning small companies that were experienced in certain types of metal processes or plastic processes that could do small lot development or orders or cable harnessing or metal casting or precision tool die making, computer programming or whatever it might be. As we searched high and low for all of these companies, we found a tremendous amount of talent out there. And what we found out was a lot of these people were perfectly willing. They have beautiful shops set up in what looks like a barn. They've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of machining equipment. And he and his son manufacture parts that might be sent all over the United States. And they indeed have capacity. They would like to manufacture more product. They could subcontract to do this type of work. Only the laws prevent them from employing anybody other than a family member in what might appear to be an ancillary facility to a farm, but indeed is a small metal shop, or is a software computer program outfit that is working out in the boondocks that writes programs for Hewlett-Packard or Tektronix or major software houses that employ one, two, three, or more additional software people. These are just some small examples, and frankly, I think from the numbers of people that you're going to see here today, we could all come up with a very impressive list of people who actually could employ additional individuals. We think that this is essential legislation. Frankly, I don't know nationally, it might be landmark legislation to set a good example of allowing people to have a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit to help employ some additional individuals in kind of a natural environment. We're talking about, yes, allow structures that appear to be compatible with the existing land use, as long as it's properly controlled and contained. Allow a maximum number of employees. We would probably recommend maybe 5 would be a nice number. You know, from practical experience at putting businesses together and helping them to grow, it would probably be reasonably defensible number, because once you start getting more than 4 or 5 employees, then you start getting all of the congestion problems, then you start getting real manufacturing processes going that would probably dictate that it should be in some sort of a industrial type or heavy commercial zone.
Madam Chair.
Representative Troop.
Could you conceive of a circumstance where 5 would be woefully excessive, or where 10 might be woefully insufficient? Is that a standard that you would apply to each and every residential neighborhood in the state of Oregon?
Well, I don't know that this necessarily ought to be limited to residential neighborhoods. I think particularly this is addressing more of the agricultural and forest type zones in a rural area. In terms of a more heavy urban setting, I don't know that you would want to have a hard and fast rule. I think what ought to be is judgment given to the local planning commissions and planning authorities, the counties and the cities, to determine what, on a case-by-case basis, if someone comes in and explains what his business activity is, if he works on a 24-hour-a-day basis where he's going to be disturbing his neighbors, it might well be that you wouldn't want him to have the program at all. He might not be allowed to have 3 people. But if it were possible that he could subtly employ 3 or 4 or 5 people, it may well be that the local review process, in essence a conditional use, could allow that.
Madam Chair, my understanding is, and Andy could probably straighten this out, is the bill written for just ag and forest zones, Andy?
I don't believe so.
Madam Chair, not necessarily. That's a sort of a buzzword around this committee, I guess, but the problem came to us from the rural areas. The bill has been slanted to the rural areas, but for most of those people are.
The interesting thing,
that
we have discovered is, as you, I think Representative Anderson mentioned, and I know Phil Scallon, who is going to testify later, can speak to it maybe better than myself, that a survey was taken to determine all of the types of vendors and special skills that were available. And there was going to be a grandiose attempt to publish that register so that everybody would know who everybody else was, and therefore you could go out and everybody could help everybody else get more business and help more companies. But probably about 75% of those people say, you know, for God's sake, don't mention my name or tell anybody I'm here and what I'm doing. Because frankly, we do have an underground economy in the state of Oregon, and it's high time to think to let them out of the closet, maybe let them employ a few people to get people off of welfare and unemployment. And also to greatly expand the ability of this state to have new industry starting and springing up around it. I think the local option that Representative Bradbury raised is a very good point. It may well be that what is good for Bend, Oregon, or good for Deschutes County or Jackson, Josephine counties may not be the right thing for metropolitan Portland, okay, or Eugene, or any city that might not want to have that kind of option. And that's why the provision is in there for local restrictions. The other thing, this, as from CCD's point of view, we've never discussed this in terms of retail outlets, Mr. Priestley's question. It seems to us the paramount need is in for manufacturing purposes. Maybe manufacturers could be direct outlet, but we did not envision when we recommended this kind of legislation that someone is using it as they're buying and selling in a retail sense. They may be retailing product they directly manufacture, but not a retail type business.
Mr. Kuhn, would you envision this anyone, whether that was just the family, member of the family, or employed one or two people, you would see this, they would still have to have a business license?
Well, not all communities have business licenses.
Okay. Well, I mean, for those that require business licenses.
If it's a business, it's a business, yes. It would have to conform with all of the OSHA standards and all the health and safety standards and insurance requirements, fire zones, everything, if it's going to employ people. And the same with business licensing, yes, I would suspect so. If it's in a county area, they may have a different set of requirements than the city might have for similar occupations, just as it is today.
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley?
Sir?
Yes.
One of the things I'm wondering, if you wanted to just keep it with the farm or forest uses, maybe we could just deal with the current law that's being excised, but allow people to hire one or two or three people or whatever. Would that satisfy them and keep it limited to farm and forest land?
I really don't know that I could say we ought to just limit it to farm and forest land. I think there might be some some light commercial zones in that might be appropriate for some non-conforming uses. Frankly, the law that's being amended today is really only related to farm and agricultural grounds. That's the homeowner occupation one, where they can have, I think, up to 500 square feet and employ relatives only, or have relatives only working in the facility. That was the changes that we'd requested were to amend that particular law to allow it to be more in the rural exceptions, it was called homeowner occupation law, to be changed.
I'm wondering about,
I have one other point to my answer, if I might. I believe that it's more important also to address the fact not only can they employ people, but they could build maybe a structure that would be compatible with the environment of that zone to allow capacity to be able to produce and to employ people and to store product, whatever it was for them to manufacture their goods. So it doesn't have to be in their house, in other words.
Another one more question.
Representative Priestley.
There are those people who argue that our economy is a demand-driven economy, that and we've had an example that they say that we've just had an example of that. We've had people say that, and have tried the idea of supply side economics. And I'm just wondering if it were to turn out that what we've seen is so, and that by changing this law, we don't have economic development, but we just, the things that we produce and do and provide in our society are done in a different place, and we organize our production differently. That is, we shift towards more cottage industry, but we have no net increase in economic production. Would you still favor this as a desirable thing to do?
First of all, economically, I would think the argument has no validity at all. Because basic industry is the creation of goods and services in any community that is exported from that community. If these people are manufacturers in a true sense, they're making product and having value added, they're making a net contribution to the economic wealth of this nation.
And they'll do that whether there's demand for them or not. Is that right?
No, you will not find large businesses going into some of the entrepreneurial activities that are going on in cottage industries. It's purely non-economic to sit yourself in a manufacturing environment in an industrial zone because of the economies of scales of some of these smaller businesses. And they would, in essence, not be undertaken. And some products and goods and services would not be created and would never end up in the real commercial marketplace on a larger scale in the future. I can give you examples of manufacturers who started out in garages and today are national companies.
We've had several of Representative Hill.
You indicated that 5 employees might be a good number to kind of target as the top level for a cottage industry. Maybe we could put that in the bill if we wanted to do that. If we left it up to local jurisdictions, one might say that 20 employees is a cottage industry, and one might say that 1 is a cottage industry. So it might be arbitrary. That's one thing I worry about. Secondly, if a cottage industry is established and grows to whatever number of employees is the top level, would that have any effect upon the assessment of the property?
Well, I don't think we assess property based upon number of employees. We assess property based upon the value of the facilities installed upon that property and the inherent value in the property. Mm-hmm. So if someone did build an ancillary facility that was used as a manufacturing process and it had a nice concrete slab and it was a fancy structure and looked great, it's going to have a higher tax base assessment than is something that's a lean-to. So therefore, if local government set certain standards, yes, you would have a favorable impact on the total tax base of that taxing area, definitely. Okay. I think you have an advantage here of increasing not only tax bases of these jurisdictions, but increasing the total income tax payments of the state and a reduction of welfare and other types of subsidy costs that are costing the other taxpayers.
If, Madam Chair, if
Representative Hill.
If an industry is established, a small cottage business is established and it's successful, the owners choose to leave the property, to sell the property, would the property be priced at farm use or would it be priced at commercial or retail? I'm talking about the property under the cottage industry.
I'm not a county appraiser, so I don't know what he would be appraising it as.
Mr. King, maybe you could answer a question. I've just been looking through the statutes that Ms. Sampson copied for us. And we've heard you and some other people refer to, well, you can only hire your family.
Relatives is what the
current
law says. It doesn't say hire either. What it really says is only relatives can work in the business in the home occupation.
I can't find it in the statutes, and I was wondering if I need to look at a different statute or if that was...
It's not. It's in the law.
I can't have you... I will need you to answer that when you come up here.
I believe he's correct. I think it's really... I believe it's state. I think it's in the land use law or administrative rules by LCDC also, because we've been through it with small businesses.
We need to check that out, because
yes,
we need to find out if there is a statute regarding that, if
point.
It is administrative rule,
correct.
If it is a local zoning ordinance, whatever.
It's
so we will do that.
Thank
have you.
You
finished?
I'm through. Thank you. If there are
Madam
other questions.
Chair.
Okay, we do have Representative Ann Lewin, and I just want to remind the committee we have about 30 people to testify today by 4, so.
I'm aware of that, but I cannot help but comment on his terminology of economic underground. I suspicion that there was an economic underground out there, but not quite with the same industries that you've been talking about, so.
Well, there's another industry we don't talk about.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Charles
you.
Charles Adams?
Apply to that. But that's within purpose. That's within purpose.
Madam Chairperson and members of the committee, I'm Charles Adams, and I'm manager of the Roseburg Area Chamber of Commerce. And I also hold the position of secretary to the Umpqua Development Corporation, and we administer a 120-acre industrial park 5 miles south of Roseburg. In our prospecting efforts, we occasionally run across a number of small enterprising firms that really do not qualify to come into an industrial park. These normally located in the rural area as what we refer to today as cottage industries. Normally they start out in a garage or barn, and in the formation of our Douglas County Chambers of Commerce in touring the rural areas, we have identified over 147 of these small firms that are producing or manufacturing a product. We do, in Umpqua Development Corporation, attempt to work with these firms because this is part of the program on diversifying the local economy. And I would like to offer to you two examples today of the success of working with a cottage industry and how it develops into a major employer and a manufacturer of goods that are exported from the county. 5 years ago, we worked with a firm that started in a barn in Camas Valley. It manufactured cut glass products. That firm increased to about 10 employees in that barn. And suddenly, he felt that he had established a market for his products that he could expand to a larger area in a properly zoned building. This company was established or moved to Winston in an abandoned lumber yard. Today, he employs 28 people. They are shipping that product to 35 states. Most recently, we looked at a firm that was assembling satellite dishes. At that time, he was working out of an abandoned building in Glide. Monday, he was moved into a compatible zoned building, and he employs 10 people assembling satellite dishes. So in our support of the bill as it is written, and we hope it's primed to the particularly the rural areas, we look at the diversity and job producing efforts of our local economy through the cottage industries development. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley.
Sir, the only thing that kind of troubles me is, and I want to be friendly to your bill, because I think you maybe have something and make a nice thing in our society, but the argument that if we found that all businesses started in garages, it doesn't, to me, follow then that we ought to allow everybody to start a business in a garage, or do you think that because they started in the barn or because they started in the garage is because... It's a non sequitur that I wished you'd had another argument instead of.
Well, they normally do not have the financial capacity to enter into a industrial park complex, nor do they normally have the capacity to rent a commercial building until they establish markets for their products.
Representative Hill.
Sir, so in starting the cottage industry and allowing it to get a foothold, to make the mistakes early and to start on a low capital basis, that's one of the intent of this bill. And if somebody wants to carry forward a small cottage industry without having it grow to the point where they have to move into a larger building, that's fine, and they could stay on their property. But if they do get big, like the satellite dish company, they will want more space. I'm a little concerned that since it started in the home, they may want to stay there on that farmland perhaps and expand to 20 people on the farmland rather than moving to the industrial park. At what point should they make the decision to stay and be small or move and grow? How big should it be when they make that decision?
That's an excellent question, and I really don't know at what point they become a large employer. I think that has to be addressed by your committee. And I don't have the answer for you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming up today. Paul Howard.
Madam Chairperson and Committee, I'm sorry I got out of hand. I was getting carried away with my 14 years in planning for cities and counties. And
that's all right.
And some of the things we're dealing with today aren't embedded in the state statutes.
Paul, did you give your name for the record?
Paul Howard.
Thank you.
I'm with the Council of Governments in Douglas County, ERCOG. Some of the things we're dealing with aren't embedded in state statutes. They're traditional zoning law that counties and cities have incorporated in ordinances several years ago. And the kind of things that the LCDC goals and guidelines don't really deal with, because it's day-to-day kind of housekeeping type of issues. And the cities, for the most part, have a good handle on the home occupations through the use of conditional use permits, as Mr. Hedgepath has indicated in Reedsport's community I work with. They have the ability to deal with that on most of their areas in the community. The problem is,
Bill 2625. We are going to take a short 5-minute recess and then open the hearing on just a minute. 2741.
Oh, this is our agenda control bill. I see.
No, not the way it's written. No.
Oh, I see.
That means that they must. I don't know that you meant it that way, but that's the way that.
Energy is called back to order. We open the hearing on House Bill 2741. We have Representative Simpson. Can we get him in here? Mr. Simpson, welcome. Representative Simpson,
I
apologize.
I left all my stuff up at the office, but I won't need it. What's the number of the bill that I'm testifying on?
3741. I'm sorry. It is 2741.
And I was here for some time, and I don't really mind waiting for people who have traveled a long distance. But I did go back up the office and left the things up there. But that's not important. Madam Chairman, and the members of the committee, for the record, I'm Representative Max Simpson, District 59 from Baker, Oregon, and have some rural ties. And I think this bill speaks to some of my beliefs. And you'll notice that I'm the only sponsor on this bill, and yet I'm sure there are others that would have... That would have been a co-sponsor with me had I've asked them. I did not, Madam Chairman, ask them to come on as a sponsor. It's a very, very simple bill, and I think there are people here today who will perhaps tell you why and how and where and all the problems seen or unforeseen. There may be people that'll. Unknowing people testify in opposition to this, but I'm not sure about that. But it does simply exempts. I think that's a key word, that's it. It exempts firing ranges, and then it describes that and from noise control and so forth. Grandfathers them in as such. And I was asked to introduce this bill by a number of gun clubs and the like, and I agreed to that without any question, Madam Chairman and members. It is a simple bill, and there are, as I said, people here in attendance today who will be your expert witnesses. And I would certainly encourage the committee, however few or many of you are here, to concur in this bill. I think it's something that's needed, and we can strike a blow for freedom and some of the things that we believe in deeply. And that's all, Madam Chairman.
I have only one question,
yes,
that
please.
You may or may not want to answer, or may want to have
yes.
somebody else answer.
Yes,
and that
please.
Is, usually when we have a bill before any of the committees, it's
yes.
because there's been a real problem that's occurring, and I need to know.
That's a problem what?
That there's a problem that has occurred is why the bill is needed.
Yes.
And my question to you is.
Is there
a problem? And maybe I see some people behind
you
shaking their head.
You will no doubt hear that, but I might say, as we sometimes do in the legislature, anticipate problems and try to speak to them in advance. And that may be your answer, Madam Chairman. Either one of them, as far as I'm concerned, would be as valid. One would be as valid as the other. Anticipation or actual problems with
I'm sorry, Representative Simpson. I thought we only dealt with crisis down here.
No. No, we...
I'm sorry.
That's a reaction. This is an action. And I think it's noteworthy and admirable that people will look down the roadways and try and take care of problems that might arise. And that may be it, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure. Thank you very much.
Can I ask Representative Simpson? It's nice.
I may not answer it, Representative.
Thanks for coming in, Representative Simpson. But now, this bill, wouldn't it prohibit a local jurisdiction, say the county commissioner someplace, maybe in Baker County, that wanted to restrict an established place to
yes, no doubt would, but they wouldn't want to restrict it, Wally, or I mean Representative Priestley. No, they wouldn't want to do a thing like, why would they want to do a thing like that?
Madam Chair.
Well, then they wouldn't need the bill if they wouldn't want to, but I mean it would prohibit them from doing it if, say, the people in Baker County said, we want to curb the noise.
Those are elected officials, and they generally do the will of the people. That's true. Yeah.
But they wouldn't be able to do the will of the people if would they, with the passage of this, if...
This would prevent someone from taking advantage of a group who had, say, let's been there for 100 years, Wally. Mm-hmm. And we understand that. We understand that. That's an extreme example, as you've used. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If people here would not mind, I will take those people that are furthest away to testify, and we have Representative Hill.
Will we have the Environmental Quality Commission discuss what rules are in existence?
Yes.
Fine, thank you.
We have Mr. Nichols from Portland, and are you going to come up with Doug?
Mr.
Yeager from Wilsonville.
I just think of my mover. You want me to go first, or you all?
I don't care.
Either one.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Doug Yeager, Wilsonville, and I am the legislative chairman of the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association, and I am the legislative representative for the Tri-County Gun Club, which is located between Sherwood and Tualatin. Representative Simpson brought this bill forward at our request after we had discussed it with him. And he's correct in that this is an anticipation as well as things that have already occurred. Our club is operating under a DEQ restriction at the present time based upon time. It became a matter of give and take, as I understand. I wasn't privy to the actual actions that were taken, although there are some here in the room that were. But basically, there was a complaint registered by people who were living quite some distance away. I believe it was something like 2 to 2.5 miles from the club, who were complaining about shotgun noise late in the evenings. And the DEQ sent out their little meters and so forth. I suspect that because of the distance involved, it's largely a matter of conditions being just adequate to for it to be bothersome to them. But the end result was that we are operating under a restricted time schedule because of this situation. I also understand that Camp Withicum, which is a government operation, has also been restricted in some way. I don't know the circumstances out there, but I understand they have also been hit with a restrictions. So there is some warrant for this. In other areas of the United States, gun clubs have literally been put out of business. They have been told to fold their targets and go home. And we don't want to see that happen here. The clubs perform a very admirable service in terms of recreation, and they also do a considerable amount of business with the community. or are responsible for it through their membership and purchases for equipment and services of the clubs themselves. Our club, for example, I would just make a guesstimate that it's getting up into a seven-figure operation in terms of its value. And you just don't pick that up and move it someplace. And I don't want to see happen to us and the other clubs in the area, like the LA airport, where they come in and build a development next to the airport, and people flock in and buy, and then scream their heads to close the airport down, and lawsuits and all the other things that happen to it. And we feel that by coming in and doing as I had lunch with Representative Katz here last session, and she told me she was a futurist, and I asked her what that was, and she says, well, I try to find answers to problems that don't exist. And I think that in this case, we have a problem that does exist, but we want to take care of it before it becomes a really serious one. And I would ask that you pass this bill out and get the clubs that are currently in operation to give them the advantage of not being harassed by regulations that are current or regulations that might become more stringent in the future that would harass us.
Thank you.
John?
Yes, I'm John Nichols. I'm on the legislative committee of the OSRPA with Doug, and I'm also legislative director for Gun Owners of Oregon, and lately, because of personnel problems, I've been dragooned into speaking for the National Rifle Association, although I'm not an employee of theirs. As Doug says, this is a problem that currently exists in a minor form, but in other parts of the country exists in an extreme form where the their particular version of the DEQ has come in and closed down ranges. One range in southeast Portland, Portland Gun Club, is a trap shotgun club. Has been there since 1913. They have an excellent rapport with their neighbors. In fact, when they went to get open space designation from the county, the neighbors trooped, signed the petition and trooped along to testify for them. However, there's one tract of land which adjoins them, which used to be farmland, which has been picked up by a developer, and he not only wants that, but he wants the gun club. And he's been trying every legal maneuver in the book, including, I understand, appeal to DEQ to get them closed down as a nuisance so that he can pick it up and put 167 tract houses on it. And our position, as Doug said, is basically if it was there, it ought to be allowed to continue unless it's an actual safety problem. You know, gun clubs put out less noise than a busy street. It's just some people don't like them.
Manager? Representative Hill.
Doug or John, maybe, I don't know who could answer it better, but a gun club is licensed by the local jurisdiction, isn't it? Like any business or any type of business? It has a permit or a license from the county?
Good
question.
No?
That's something
There's no permit whatsoever?
Well, we're a non-incorporation or a non-profit corporation from that standpoint.
My concern is that even if we were to adopt the bill, that wouldn't stop neighbors from screaming. And it probably wouldn't stop them from going to the local planning department or the local city council or board of commissioners and saying, shut them down. See? So if you want to keep that from happening, this bill won't prevent that from happening. If the bill goes through, it would prevent DEQ possibly from...
Well, they were the people we're most concerned with at the moment. Generally speaking, most gun clubs do have a fairly decent rapport with the neighbors. Our local, the people who are right around the club, have never given us any problems. And I think a good many people recognize that we have police shooting on the ranges, we have military shooting on the ranges, Boy Scouts, junior shooters. There's a wide, vast variety of types and groups of people who use these ranges for recreational purposes or training. our club has put on any number of firearms familiarization courses for women and people who are, have unfamiliarity with firearms. And so they have a considerable benefit to the community. And generally speaking, we don't anticipate that kind of a problem. But where you run this bounce-off thing like we did with the restriction we're under now, that's something to say. It becomes a matter of officialdom. And that plus the fact that, as John said, the clubs back east that have been shut down by the same type of official agencies scare us.
Have you gone, in the case of Portland, the Trap Club in Portland, have they gone to the local planning commission to say, we'd like this to be open space, we'd like this to be zoned open space, or sought an amendment to the plan to protect them?
Yes, John Nichols again. yes, they recently went to the county commission, and after their taxes were doubled, and applied for open space designation and received it, and they had, with the exception of the gentleman who owned the piece of property that he wanted to combine with theirs and use as a development, had virtually 100% assent of the neighbors. So most gun clubs that I'm aware of have excellent rapport with their neighbors, and most of them have with the planning commissions and county commissions. What we're worried about is this DEQ, which has the potential for being a monster and scares us.
We anticipate that sometime in the future we may be having the same kind of problem with Metro, because they have certain kinds of land use capabilities in their that Medusa-headed monster that can give us trouble too.
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley and then Representative Anderson.
I wanted to make it perfectly clear that anyone interested, that I want to be friendly towards anyone interested in guns as well, as you're talking about your neighbors and so forth, before I ask any question.
We don't have an open season on representatives yet.
Okay. Well, I wish you hadn't said that. But anyway, one of the things there, two things came up. Now I'm wondering. I just had thought that it's able to, you're able to operate a pistol range or a rifle range in an enclosed structure, so it wouldn't be acoustically offensive to people. Number two, when we were on our little junket with the Revenue Committee, they took us out behind an armory. We have to visit all the armories. And they showed us a place where they fire, they move a tank up, and they practice with this tank. Now, it's some kind of a way that the gun goes off in the tank, apparently, that doesn't... I didn't even ask the question, how in the world can they fire a tank cannon and not wake up the whole city of whatever it was we were in. I forget which one. I think it was Pendleton. Isn't there a way that you folks can fire these weapons either inside or in such a way that they're not noisome?
Well, many organizations do have inside ranges, which this is not would not be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're shooting at the 5,000 yard ranges, that's not just not logistically possible. The NRA has done some experimentation with baffling, rather expensive baffling, in some ranges in the east that has shown some promise, but as I say, it's very expensive. It requires rather extensive engineering and so forth. Most of the clubs out here, ours for example, are in a rather rough terrain where we're utilizing the ravine type areas to do our shooting in, and therefore we have some natural baffling involved. As it happens, our shotgun range is up on a higher piece of ground, and this was the guilty area in our case. But we, as far as I know, have not had any problems with the rifle ranges and so
but
forth.
You can't use something, say you want to develop a skill with this rifle, but rather than firing a rifle for 5,000 feet or some such thing, or 5,000 yards, you just use it 5,000.
Oh, that's 1,000 yards.
Yeah, 1,000 yards. Can't you have some gadget that'll help you get your accuracy and so forth? It doesn't make a lot of noise, but
we're talking about competition shooting, though. You can't. Oh. This is not just ordinary. This isn't just practice or sighting in a gun or something. We're having competitions of people who come from all over the West to enter matches to shoot in these ranges and so on.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chairman and Representative Priestley, the problem is with existing ranges is they've been there since